Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, with John Landecker, welcoming back to the program one of our favorite people, Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief at Astra Magazine, host of podcast This Week in Space. Good evening, Rod. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, John. Where the hell did you find that song? I'd never heard that before. I've heard all the wacky space songs.
You know, I cannot reveal my sources. Otherwise, everybody will just do it, and I won't sound unique anymore. But
those black Chevy Tahoes pull up in front of the station and start looking for you, right? Okay.
How'd you know?
Because I go on coast to coast, man. I know it all.
So let's talk about, you sent us an email, and it sounds like a very serious situation that's currently unfolding. Fill us in.
So this is a space station. I wouldn't call it an emergency. I'd call it an event of concern. Hmm. And this happened on December 14th. So the International Space Station always has at least two spacecraft docked to it, usually a Soyuz from the Russians, and more recently, American spacecraft, and that, of course, means a SpaceX Crew Dragon. And you want to have enough capsules up there that if they have to retreat into the capsule because of an emergency, like a radiation spike or, you know, puncture, an oxygen leak, something like that, they've got that. And then if they need to come home urgently, you want enough capacity to bring home however many people are up there. And that usually means having two spacecraft sitting there on standby. So they have a Dragon and a Soyuz. And on December 14th, suddenly somebody at NASA noticed a pressure reading on the Soyuz beginning to drop, and they turned on the camera. And sure enough, there's this big cloud of ice particles spraying out of the side of the Russian spacecraft. Went on for about 18 hours. And what they realized is somehow it had either gotten punctured or sprung a leak, and all the coolant sprayed out. Now, you need coolant to keep the electronics going in there, even when it's just on standby. And certainly for coming home, you need coolant to keep the thing working. So it looks like we got a dead capsule up there, and they're going to have to figure out some way to get enough capacity to bring these people home, because they're not on the ISS, but there's been a fire on another space station in the past, the Russian Mir. You can get a puncture, you can get pressure loss. So there's a lot of reasons you want to make sure that you've got a way to get home in a hurry.
Do they have a way to get home?
No. Well, so let me rephrase that. It's possible that so you got seven guys, and there's right. I think four seats in the Crew Dragon. It's right. possible you could have the remainder of them lay on the floor underneath the crew couches. But you'd have to study that very carefully, because even though you're coming down in the ocean with the Crew Dragon, it's a splashdown, not a dry landing, you know, it hits with some force at about 18, 20 miles an hour, I think. And that's enough that if you're not in a crew couch, it could hurt your back. Now, that's better than dying in space. So in an emergency, there's a reasonable chance it could bring those guys back, but then it changes the weight balance of the capsule and all that. So they'd have some work to do to make sure they could do that safely. The other option is you just hurry up and get another Soyuz capsule up there as quick as possible and hope that one doesn't break. This used to be one of the most reliable spacecraft in the world. The Russians have been building them since 1965. But in the last 6-7 years, as their economy's stumbled a bit and their budgets are cutting and they've got some serious brain drain in the engineering end of this, they would have some problems, as we've seen.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, yes. there's an 18-hour leak of coolant from the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. Am I got that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, that sounds like a sci-fi movie gone wrong. And
it looked like one, too, because you can see the video online. It's like, oh, that looks like a cheesy special effect from
exactly.
Lost in Space or something. Yeah.
Right, right, right. And so there's two capsules, and how many individuals all total?
There's seven up there now. I think three Russians and four Americans, or maybe it's the reverse. I can't remember.
And how are they? How are they separated in via the? I mean, who's in what capsule? Who's in the Soyuz and who's in the other, so to speak?
Well, when they went up, it was Americans and the Crew Dragon, and as I recall, and then one American and two Russians in the Soyuz. Because we've started, even with everything that's going on in Ukraine, we've started buying seats from them again and allowing them to get seats on our spacecraft, because we like to have this international diplomacy and trading. And it's kind of weird that it's going on during a war in Europe, but you know, at least we're keeping some diplomatic contact going, even though it's only through the space program. It's kind of a head-scratcher, but I think it's good overall.
But it's this Russian's Soyuz that's at the cause of all of this, and I think you just mentioned one of the ways to remedy this is for the Russians to send up a brand-new rocket. But that doesn't sound to me the way you're describing the way things are now, you know, diplomatically and every other way, that would be something that could happen with any kind of great haste.
Well, but it's their guys, right? I mean, yeah. At least two of the three people that would be stuck there are Russians. And they have shown some disregard for the safety of their own people in the past. A few years ago, they did a anti-satellite missile test, and they knew damn well that the debris flow from that was going to go right up against the space station. And they had Russian cosmonauts up there, and they did the test anyway, and they had to do an emergency maneuver to move the space station out of the way. So they can be a little backhanded in their handling of even their own folks. But so far, you know, when you look at the way NASA Mission Control talks to Russian Mission Control and the way the astronauts get along, you know, there hasn't been any major break or slowdown in this since the Ukraine situation started. We were wondering a bit, you know, when the attack first occurred, the assault on the country, is there going to be an issue? But,
yeah,
you know, it slowed down and got a little quieter for a few weeks, and then everything was business as usual. So I got to give them credit. You know, they're keeping their nose clean that way. And remember Dmitry Rogozin, the guy who used to run the Russian space program? He used to yell, "Oh, you Americans stink, and you want to get into space, ride your brooms and all that kind of stuff." Well, he's gone. He was the guy that when the last Soyuz sprung a leak about a year and a half ago, it just leaked, you know, it had a hole in it, which was clearly a manufacturing flaw. He immediately came out and said, "Oh, one of your American astronauts went out there with a drill and drilled a hole in it because they're freaking out and want to come home." So we're not hearing that kind of stuff this time, which is nice.
Well, what is the probable cause of this leak?
It's a great question. You know, there was a meteor shower right about the time this happened, and the Geminids meteor shower happens every year. And this is where the Earth, along its orbit, crosses past the tail of a defunct comet that's fallen apart. So it's basically like flying through a gravel bank. So there was a suspicion that maybe it was one of those particles that punctured it. But according to the people who do orbital dynamics and analysis and all that stuff that I can't even begin to figure out, it's not that. So it was either a straight piece of space debris or a manufacturing error. But they did find the hole. It's about a third of an inch. You know, pretty big when you're trying to keep coolant inside something that's in a vacuum. And, you know, just to contextualize this, basically, we've got guys living in the space station, which is a big aluminum can with air inside and a vacuum outside, and it's got climate control, and it's surrounded by smaller cans filled with explosive comic chemicals. It's kind of like living in a small condo with firebombs in some random rooms and hoping they don't go off. So you don't like it when something slams into, you know, your controlled bomb over there. So that makes everybody a little nervous.
When do you think there will be some resolution to this? When will people know that everyone will be safe?
They held a press conference today, and unfortunately I was traveling for Christmas vacation during the conference, and I haven't seen any major news from it yet. I know that the Russians were planning to send the next Soyuz up in March. They could probably advance that by at least 2 months, because, like I said, they've been building and flying these things for 50 years almost, and actually more. And they're really good at it. And so they just, you know, step on the gas a little bit and get the thing up a little earlier. How soon SpaceX could turn around another Dragon to get it up there, I don't know. They also move very, very fast. So the question in either case, I don't think, is there a rocket ready? It's, is there a capsule ready and tested and vetted to take off and go? But in theory, you could do it in a couple of weeks.
We're talking to Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. 720 WGN, that's supposed to have a little Christmassy outer space feel to it. Maybe, maybe not. John Landecker at 720 WGN, 748, talking to Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. And we've been discussing a situation that exists right now at the space station, the International Space Station, with... well, with a dilemma as to how to, if needed, bring people home due to a leak in the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. But apparently there's no final answer or decision as to how that's going to be handled. So I guess we'll just move on. But the thing that strikes me is this just happened a few days ago, and if I wouldn't have heard about it unless you sent us an email. So, I mean, I'm a little
weird.
I'm a little like, what's going on? I mean, I know there's other big news stories. I get that.
Yeah.
But the idea that astronauts from both countries are stranded up there and there's possibility of no lifeboat at this particular point, to use that phrase. I mean, I would think that that would be newsworthy, and I haven't heard a peep other than getting your email.
And almost worse, it's not that they're all stranded there. It's that half of them are stranded there, potentially.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, let's draw straws and see who gets to go home. And I guess
right.
The Americans would go home. But, yeah, it's a little weird. You kind of got a sense for a while of nothing to see here, move along, you know. But I think, honestly, if there was more of a sense of panic, the space press would have picked up on it and said, hey, you know, because they will often take NASA to task over things, depending on which outlet you're talking about.
Right.
So, you know, at this point, there's no reason to expect that anything would go wrong. However, the space station is 22 years old now, actually close to 24, but it's been occupied for 22 years. And that's when stuff starts going wrong, you know, so you just want to be extra careful. And the Russians did say, the Russian engineers on the Soyuz side said, you know, you might want to rotate that space station a little bit every couple of days to keep the thing in the shade. And then as the guys are like, oh, yeah, because if the pressure starts going up too much,
right,
and the heat's
right,
up, you could get a kabang. So, yeah, they're obviously thinking about it.
You know,
I'll try and track down more news as we move along, but that's what I know now.
There's two things about this that intrigue me, if that's the right word. One is the difference in diplomacy on Earth and the difference in diplomacy at the space station. Because, as you just mentioned, you know, the whole Russian-Ukraine situation, the president of the Ukraine addressed Congress yesterday. That's what's going here on Earth. Up in the space station, you have representatives of the United States and Russia having to work together at the same time that the United States is supplying an enemy of Russia with arms. I'm not saying that I'm not saying that we shouldn't. Don't get me wrong. I'm just making an observation that both of these things exist at the same time. And that strikes me as being unique. Maybe that's not the right word.
Careful.
Fraught with questions.
Potential.
Let's just put it that way. Yeah. I mean, I've seen sci-fi movies where, you know, the Russians and the American astronauts have to do something together and there's,
right,
you know, the immediate distrust and things of that nature. And I don't know how things on Earth are relayed to representatives of respective nations while they're cohabiting a space station. I just don't know.
Well,
I guess,
you know, these guys, a lot of them are former military. A lot of them, most of them are trained scientists or engineers or doctors or something. So they're pretty sophisticated people, and they seem to be able to keep their emotions in check when it comes to politics and these concerns, which I admire, especially, you know, if you served your country in the Air Force, let's say, for 10 years before you became an astronaut,
right,
and you were stationed in Europe as an advanced bomber squadron to go into Russia, you know, should the worst happen. How do you flip that switch to suddenly now, okay, comrade, everything's cool? And to make it weirder, up until a few years ago, the Russians had a pistol aboard the Soyuz. They had a gun up there because it was possible. Remember, the Soyuz lands in Siberia or Mongolia, Siberia, on dry land. And they had had incidents where it had gone off course and landed off their, hundreds of miles away from their landing zone. And cosmonauts had gotten stuck overnight trying to fend off hungry bears and stuff. So they said, okay, in the 70s, I think it was, they said, okay, we'll give them a gun. So they had one kind of gun that was like a half pistol, half shotgun thing. And then later they said, just give them a Tokarev, which is like a 45. And so for
my God.
2 years, they had that and their bottle of vodka stuck away in the, in the Soyuz. And those aren't things you want to mix together, right?
Oh, no. No.
It was good, but yeah.
There's one other aspect of this. I mean, that goes through my mind. Okay, we have the situation on Earth, Russia and the United States. We have the situation in space, Russia and the United States. Then you mentioned the rockets. So you have the Soyuz, and then you have SpaceX, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's still Elon Musk, isn't it?
Crazy Elon, yes.
Well, okay. There. Need I say more? I mean,
yes.
how does all that work? I don't.
You mean in terms of the whole Twitter thing and all that?
Well, just the way. I mean, I can understand people can what they call compartmentalize. I believe where, he could allegedly take the Twitter situation and put it in one part of his brain, and the SpaceX in another part of his brain. And the Tesla crashing in California and another part of his brain, but it just strikes me as being a very challenging situation, especially.
Well, all the reporting from people that work at these places, so at SpaceX in particular, he's got Gwynne Shotwell as his president and CEO below him. He's the chairman of the board, I think. Anyway, he calls himself like the galactic leader or something. But his immediate lieutenant is Gwynne Shotwell. She's very pragmatic, very rooted in the here and now, very systems-oriented, very procedural, very much in charge. So if he stepped away for a year, she could run SpaceX along with her senior staff.
Okay.
What you might not have is the fire-breathing dragon of Elon pushing for Starship, pushing for Mars, pushing for this, pushing for that. I'm not crazy about the fact that he's been distracted by this Twitter thing for even the few months that he has, but he gets to do what he wants to do.
Oh, that's right.
He's
really
rich.
No, that's right. It's his dime. Yeah, it's his dime. He gets to do with it what he wants. One other quick thing. We got a few minutes here. I just want to change course completely. So everybody's justifiably concerned about the wind chills that are around Chicago tonight. We're talking 30, 40, 50 degrees below zero. What's the temperature in outer space? What's the temperature in outer space?
In the shade, it's about -250 Fahrenheit, and in the sun, it's about +250. So that's why when they were sending the Apollo capsules to the moon, they put them in what they call barbecue mode. So they spin along the long axis and distribute the heat evenly. But if you were out there in shirt sleeves for more than about 30 seconds, you'd be a crispy critter on the one side and an ice ball on the other.
Rod is also a host of a podcast called This Week in Space, and you have a holiday special coming up, which I saw a brief news blurb somewhere over the past couple of days about Christmas dinner for astronauts, and it showed like four or five little packets of various colors that supposedly represented, I don't know, turkey, mashed potatoes, or something
turkey
or other.
Loaf, cranberry sauce.
Yeah. Is that the way it goes? I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's a little better now. They've actually got the executive chef that programs the food for the space station. And especially if you go back to. So the podcast episode this week is about Apollo 8, because it's 1968, Christmas Eve, terrible year. And then we get this transmission, this reading of Genesis from lunar orbit on Christmas Eve. Is a big deal. I mean, those guys were basically eating a little better than toothpaste and like paste patties,
Right,
with a little bit of hot water squirt.
Yeah.
But we were fortunate to get the flight director from that flight, Jerry Griffin, who's this really nice guy. So I was able to grab him for half an hour. And he talked about what it was like to be there at Christmas and all that stuff. So I was just on cloud nine. So if you get a chance, check it out.
It's called This Week in Space, and I'm guessing that it's available wherever podcasts are sold or heard or transmitted or whatever they're called.
Places, downloaded. Stream, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. Yeah, they used to have, wasn't it Tang? Is that a powdered, wasn't there wasn't Tang a part of the menu for astronauts as far as orange juice?
But, you know, there was always this conception that, it was invented for the space program. Around for years. NASA just said, hey, this stuff is good. And the other good thing about it is the powder is kind of granular.
Right.
So it doesn't suddenly just go puff and get all over your capsule and into your lungs. So that was kind of important. So it was kind of the ideal drink. It's pretty hideous stuff if you've had it lately.
I have. Yeah, it is pretty hideous.
When I was on that Arctic trip, we drank Tang by the gallon because it was all we could do. And I won't be drinking Tang again soon.
Well, Rod, thank you so much for making us aware of what's going on up there. And thanks for being with us tonight. And happy holidays, Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, and happy New Year, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Happy holidays to you, and stay inside and stay warm, man.
I sure will. Rod Pyle, who's the editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and the podcast is This Week in Space, and it's going to be a holiday special.